From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
That big new immigrant detention facility in the Everglades is attracting lots of attention, both negative and positive.
Every country has immigration laws and enforces them. Sadly, if people weren't violating the laws, we wouldn't need this out here in the first place.
Also this week, the attention is also boosting the political fortunes of Florida's attorney general.
You know, the way it's looking in Florida for statewide offices, Republicans have a big advantage.
We'll also explore the possible impact of immigration policy changes on Florida's large Haitian population, and we'll see what many Florida dentists think about the state's new ban on fluoride in public water supplies. I'm Tom Flanagan, online and on air. This is Capitol Report and the end-of-week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee. And by the way, happy 4th of July. The Trump administration this week argued a federal judge should deny a request to block operation of that detention center in the Everglades for undocumented immigrants, saying Florida has been responsible for the project dubbed Alligator Alcatraz. U.S. Department of Justice attorneys filed a 9-page document opposing a request by environmental groups for a temporary restraining order to halt operation of the facility. Friends of the Everglades and the Center for Biological Diversity filed a lawsuit last week, accompanied by the request for a temporary restraining order. The Justice Department attorneys said part of the lawsuit involves the federal law known as the Administrative Procedure Act. They said the environmental groups have not met a requirement under the law of showing a final federal agency action. And the filing came 2 days after President Donald Trump, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, Governor Ron DeSantis, and other federal and state officials gathered at the site to tout the detention center, which has drawn national attention. The Miami Herald reported Thursday morning that the first detainees started arriving at the facility Wednesday night. But along with supporters of that new detention center, there were also outspoken opponents, as President Trump and Governor DeSantis and the rest of their delegation were met by protesters nearby voicing their environmental and humanitarian concerns. WLRN's Tim Padgett was there.
Alligator Alcatraz, we say no!
Demonstrators decried what they called the unnecessary cruelty of detaining thousands of undocumented migrants in the remote facility just north of Tamiami Trail in southwest Florida. They also refuted Governor Ron DeSantis' assertion that Alligator Alcatraz will have, quote, zero environmental impact on the Everglades. Zach Costner is a Miami activist.
It just stacks up to be completely unconscionable and absurd to say that a 5,000-person prison camp, the waste produced, the noise pollution, trucks coming in at all times, is not going to have massive impacts.
Trump supporters gathered outside Alligator Alcatraz as well. And some, like Miami photographer Chauncey O'Connor, themselves expressed environmental concerns but backed the president's hardline immigration policy.
Every country has immigration laws and enforces them. Sadly, if people weren't violating the laws, we wouldn't need this out here in the first place.
Environmental groups have filed suit in federal court to block Alligator Alcatraz's operation. I'm Tim Padgett in Miami.
The so-called Alligator Alcatraz Immigrant Detention Center opening this week in South Florida also brought some national attention to the state's Attorney General, James Uthmeyer. Tristan Wood reports, political watchers say it's a massive boost for the little-known politician.
Uthmeyer has been Governor Ron DeSantis' chief of staff and one of his top advisors. Then, when former Attorney General Ashley Moody was appointed to be U.S. Senator to replace Marco Rubio at the start of Trump's administration, Uthmeyer was appointed to take her place. He's running in 2026 to keep the position, and have some wondering whether he'd face a challenge from other Florida Republicans. Some thought President Donald Trump might not want a DeSantis ally in the job. Then, Trump said these words about Uthmeyer at the detention facility's opening.
You do a very good job. I hear good things. I hear good things about you from Ron, too. No, you really do. He's even a good-looking guy. That guy's got a future, huh? Good job, James. I hear you did really, really fantastic. Worked hard.
While not an outright endorsement, political watchers say the president's comments will help introduce Uthmeyer to Republican voters. A Republican pollster in March found Uthmeyer was trailing by 18 points behind a potential matchup with former Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz. But the largest percent of Republicans polled have no idea who they would support. University of Central Florida political science professor Aubrey Jewett says this new exposure has catapulted Uthmeyer's appeal to the largest group of voters in the state.
Because right now, you know, the way it's looking in Florida for statewide offices, Republicans have a big advantage. And so if you win the Republican primary, I won't say you're guaranteed to win the general, but you have an inside track on winning the general because Republicans now have a 1.2 million vote lead in registration.
It's a change for Uthmeyer, who just a few months ago was under attack by some fellow Republicans. He was at the center of an investigation by Florida House Republicans into the Hope Florida Foundation scandal. Lawmakers say Uthmeyer worked to divert Medicaid settlement money through a charity to political committees fighting recreational marijuana. Now, Orlando Democratic State Senator Carlos Guillermo Smith thinks Trump's words of support may be enough to keep Republicans upset with Uthmeyer from challenging him in 2026.
Every story that's been written about Uthmeyer since this announcement has been about that. It's been about alligator Alcatraz and fighting illegal immigration and deporting immigrants. It's not been about Hope Florida. So he has done a great job, politically speaking, of changing the media narrative and changing the social media narrative. It's just, this is what people are talking about now.
For people not tuned into politics constantly, Jewett thinks the coverage around alligator Alcatraz could drown out the rest of Uthmeyer's record. So far, one other Republican, Punta Gorda attorney Stephen Leskovich, has filed to run for attorney general. For now, Uthmeyer is the clear frontrunner. I'm Tristan Wood.
Americans granted temporary protected status, or TPS, to Haitians after the 2010 earthquake has been renewed several times since then. The Department of Homeland Security said it would end TPS in early September, but a federal judge has extended it back to the original expiration date in February of next year. So, what does this mean for the hundreds of thousands of Haitians who have been living and working legally in the U.S. for years? This includes more than 128,000 immigrants in Florida. WLRN's Wilkin Brutus spoke with immigration attorney Vanessa Joseph about the impact of the Trump administration's decision to end TPS for Haitians. Joseph also serves as the city of North Miami's elected city clerk.
TPS, as you may be well aware, Wilkin, is a lifeline for hundreds of thousands of Haitian nationals in the U.S., and it allows them to live and work lawfully here because the conditions in Haiti have been too dangerous for them to return. And just so that we can contextualize it a little bit, TPS was first granted after the 2010 earthquake, and it's been repeatedly extended because of ongoing crises. So we think about the political turmoil that's taken place, different natural disasters. And so this means that there are many Haitian TPS holders who have had this benefit for more than a decade, where they've been able to, in that time, build families and communities right here in the United States. So if TPS, in fact, goes away the way that we have seen it's announced, the impact on the Haitian community and in communities throughout the United States would be devastating. We're talking about our neighbors. For many of us, it's our colleagues, our coworkers, our family members who are going to suddenly lose their legal status. And so if we are thinking about the different aspects that are at stake, there's family separation. Many TPS holders have had U.S. citizen-born children. We're disrupting communities. TPS holders have been deeply integrated into their communities, and they're working as teachers, healthcare workers, small business owners, and doing much more, putting food on our tables. And of course, the humanitarian concerns. It's literally life or death for many people to think about having to be forced to return to Haiti.
The Department of Homeland Security claims conditions in Haiti have improved, yet it issued a travel ban citing political violence and instability. How does that align with what you and your clients are seeing on the ground?
I think it's completely at odds with reality, with what all of us are seeing, right? Because if Haiti were truly safe and improved, then why would we be telling Americans not to travel there? From what I'm seeing, conditions have not, in fact, improved. And I would argue that they've actually worsened. And when we think about what's actually happening on the ground, you have extreme violence and lawlessness, widespread gang violence. Armed gangs have essentially taken control of large parts of the capital and other areas, committing acts of violence against women and children, and just wreaking havoc on entire neighborhoods, kidnapping people for ransom. You have 1.3 million people, I believe, in Haiti who are actually displaced from their homes as a result of the violence. And when you think about that number, that's 10% of the population. And the police authorities are overwhelmed and are not able to protect their own citizens. So you have a government that's quite literally in collapse. And look, it's completely false that conditions have improved in Haiti. And I think Haitians on the ground in Haiti are experiencing one of the worst periods of instability in decades.
Haitian TPS holders contribute billions in federal, state, and local taxes. How does this expected decision to end TPS not only impact them personally, but also affect the broader communities where they live and work?
These are folks who have been contributing to the United States for years. Hardworking, tax-paying residents. Nothing a Haitian loves more than to be able to say that they pay taxes, right? Especially when they immigrate to this country. And so thinking about maybe $3 billion plus dollars annually helping to fund Social Security, Medicare, schools, roads, and the other public services that our communities rely on, I think these are significant numbers that show that TPS beneficiaries, including Haitian TPS beneficiaries, have really been pulling their weight economically. So they're taxpayers, right? They're not a burden on our communities.
There are ongoing legal challenges across the country in states like Massachusetts, California, and Maryland. Do you think there's any chance these lawsuits could delay or stop the termination of TPS for Haitians?
It seems that now more than ever, these legal avenues are a little bit more limited, especially as a result of the Supreme Court's decision in the most recent case around birthright citizenship and saying that injunctions, that federal judges don't have the authority to establish nationwide injunctions. And so it's really important for us to contextualize that and think about what that could mean. And the fact that it was these legal avenues that had for many protected TPS all of this time. And so it's going to be extremely important for people to seek out legal counsel because you need to be able to know what to do in your own case. It would be lovely that we had a blanket solution for this and that we could just rely on the courts. But unfortunately, that's not the case right here, right now. A lot of Haitian immigrants are not going to have an immediate avenue of lawful status for them to just enter into. And people are scrambling to consult with an immigration attorney. I know I'm getting more calls than I've ever gotten in my career and trying to see how they can find that maybe ray of hope for themselves. And so there's a great fear out there, but people should not wait until the last minute. They really need to seek legal advice right now.
Are you hearing stories of Haitians self-deporting themselves?
I'm hearing a lot of people in the Haitian community ask themselves and ask others whether that's the option for them. I think people have been hearing that because you can get some money to move, they'd rather just move and just let everything go. And again, I don't think that that's often the only solution or that's the solution that they should just take without, again, consulting with an immigration attorney because there could be implications. The idea is, well, if I self-deport, then they'll allow me back into the country through another mechanism. We don't know that to be true. We do not know what will happen tomorrow.
That was immigration attorney Vanessa Joseph speaking with WLRN's Wilkin Brutus. It's been a little over a year since the Florida Heartbeat Act went into effect, banning abortion procedures after 6 weeks of gestation. In Florida, abortion numbers have fallen significantly compared to previous years. But after the Dobbs decision 3 years ago reversed the abortion protections of Roe v. Wade, Joe Mario Pedersen reports abortion totals increased nationwide.
Between 2023 and 2024, abortion totals increased by nearly 86,000 terminations across the country. However, that didn't happen in Florida, where abortions fell by 20,000 cases in that same time period, and after the passing of a 15-week and then 6-week ban. Matt Staver is the founder of the Liberty Council, which worked to prevent the passing of a 2024 amendment that would have codified abortion rights into Florida's constitution. Staver says Florida has made good progress in the pro-life movement and could be an example for the country.
I think that is a trend and a template that other states are considering. I think there'll be a lot of additional states that will follow Florida's lead.
Democratic Florida House Representative Anna Escamani has worked to strengthen abortion rights in Florida. She says Florida's pro-life agenda is not a growing trend in the state. She also acknowledged that while last year's Amendment 4 did not get 60% of the necessary votes,
it did secure 57%. And so for individuals that brag about how, you know, restrictive care is in Florida, they are the minority and they need to feel that way.
This year, Florida has had 17,000 abortions, which is almost half of what the number was this time last year. Joe Mario Pedersen in Orlando.
Broward County Public Schools are welcoming artificial intelligence into classrooms in the coming school year. The district is collaborating with Microsoft in a, quote, landmark initiative to transform education with its AI chatbot, Copilot. This is the largest K-12 adoption of Microsoft Copilot in the world, according to a district press release. WLRN Education reporter Natalie LaRoche-Pietri spoke with district staff spearheading the initiative. Executive Director of District IT Operations Michael Castaneda and Director of Innovative Learning Sherry Wilson start by explaining the thinking behind the move.
In order to be progressive within education, you have to move with the times. Artificial intelligence and where we are right now as a culture and society is no different. So infusing artificial intelligence tools ethically and responsibly is what we have to do as practitioners to make sure that we are not participating in any type of educational malpractice.
I'm old enough to remember back in the day when we were teaching and there was talk of Google and of the internet and the fear of what that would do. But in reality, as educators, we can't be afraid of the pace of technology. We have to embrace it, and we have to ensure that our students are prepared to embrace it as well.
Broward County Public Schools blocked the use of ChatGPT on all district-owned devices in 2023. What changed from then to now for the district to want to explore having AI in classrooms?
Infrastructure is what changed. With the establishing of our artificial intelligence task force, we have the opportunity to look at different types of artificial intelligence that are most appropriate for our academic spaces so that we can fortify our classrooms across the board.
Why choose Microsoft Copilot as opposed to other AI models? What considerations went into deciding which model to adopt?
We actually went to Cypress Bay High School and we worked with our juniors and seniors and some freshmen in a collaborative conversation about artificial intelligence, where students actually had the opportunity to really voice what academic integrity looked like to them with using artificial intelligence tools. And they talked about the tools that they used, like ChatGPT. And we actually had them rate and do prompt engineering to see what type of results they received by putting in questions that they wanted answers to, research they wanted more information on. So that refining process really allows the student to take and have ownership of their learning and have agency and working in collaboration with those teachers who may be fighting the stigma of, well, when I was in grad school, we couldn't really use Google because it wasn't considered to be a legitimate research tool. Look at where we are now with Google as a search engine.
We also approached school administrators, district administrators, administrative assistants, and we did something very similar. We provided sample prompts, and we provided the opportunity for us to see what the different tools would generate. And AI sometimes hallucinates. And we got a lot of that. And certain tools and certain prompts tend to create responses that are not as accurate as others. And we saw that, and that went into our vetting. One of our decision points also came down to which of the tools aligns best with our current environment. And right now, we are ensconced as a Microsoft district in that we have Word, Excel, PowerPoint. We use Outlook. Having that the Copilot AI automatically connect to all those tools was definitely an advantage.
Students all over the country have taken advantage of AI to cheat on schoolwork. What precautions is the district taking to avoid student cheating?
We have encouraged each school to establish an artificial intelligence liaison point of contact at their school that will work in conjunction with the Department of Innovative Learning, where we will go through the AI literacy program for Broward County Public School students. And within this packaging, they will have different resources. What we did discover when we used a scale of what do you feel like is the actual entry point of when you've gone too far with artificial intelligence when it comes to you using it for your schoolwork, a research paper, etc. And when you talk about a scale, we'll say for argument's sake today, that it was a 10-point scale. Teachers felt that at maybe the level 3, this is plagiarism. But for our students, they were at a level 7 as the entry point for what they felt plagiarism looked like. So there's a gap there where, from a generational standpoint, what we know plagiarism to be, but then what research and trying to get information looked like to the students using artificial intelligence. So the crux and the real heart of the conversation was right there to establish, well, this is why this could be a problem and misconstrued as being plagiarism, and where can we come to a fair medium where you don't feel like you're being restricted or accused of doing something wrong, but we know from a practitioner standpoint, this is where you're crossing the line of the work not being original, and we need to put safeguards there.
Solution to cheating, quote unquote, on AI, it's not a technology solution, because technology, yes, there are tools that can theoretically detect plagiarism in AI, but then the AI gets better, and then the tool has to get better. It's an arms race that'll never be won. In reality, and this is something we are working closely, and the academics team is definitely focusing on, is working with teachers at how to check for understanding and how to try to detect when a student has gone too far and is simply not bringing an original thought into a discussion. AI is going to change the way that we interact. It's going to change the way that we obtain information and we synthesize and analyze that information. And we need to make sure that we move along with it rather than trying to find ways to stop it.
Miami-Dade County Public Schools recently adopted Google Gemini for its own AI exploration. The district has a program offering AI courses for teachers like Transform Your Lesson Planning with AI and Discover How AI Language Models Can Revolutionize Teaching Writing. Can you speak about what training and preparation will look like for Broward teachers?
We have currently started our process with revamping and creating from scratch our professional development blueprint that supports artificial intelligence work. That will be available for our teachers starting in August.
We are working closely with Microsoft and with the AI Task Force because we don't want to just roll it out and leave everyone wondering how to use it. So Microsoft is engaging with us, establishing centers of excellence.
Will Copilot be introduced by grade level or all at once?
We are planning on starting with high schools as students there are closer to graduating and to needing these skills in order to graduate, and then working our way down where the majority of our users are obviously going to be in the elementary school level.
That was WLRN education reporter Natalie LaRoche-Pietri speaking with Broward's Executive Director of IT Operations, Manuel Castaneda, and Director of Innovative Learning, Sherry Wilson. You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, A new Florida law took effect as of this past Tuesday, 1st of July, that prohibits municipalities from adding the mineral fluoride to their drinking water supply. Dentists are warning that the move will hurt children's health. Supporters of the ban say Floridians have been forced to consume fluoride-treated waters without understanding how the mineral might affect the human body. WGCU's Sandra Victorova has more.
There's little quiet time for the primary care team at Healthcare Network in Naples. Busy is typical for Dr. Sal Anzalone, but the pediatrician is preparing to make an unexpected change to his treatment plan for many of his youngest patients.
Most people don't realize that these teeth are susceptible, especially if the baby's breastfeeding or bottle feeding, to decay.
Anzalone says he'll begin prescribing fluoride supplements to children. He's concerned about an impending rise in tooth decay once fluoride is eliminated from Florida's drinking water. Anzalone says he's seen what a lack of fluoridated water can do in rural parts of the country.
I'm very concerned because there's nothing like looking in a child's mouth and seeing black or decay and knowing that what that's going to mean for that child for growth and development. The pain and suffering that occur to children, it's not necessary. Not when we have an answer. We've been very successful, but we're going backwards, I think, instead of forwards.
They can drink away tomorrow's tooth decay.
For decades, science experts have touted drinking water as one of the greatest achievements in public health since the country began fluoridating water in 1945. The Florida Dental Association says water fluoridation reduces dental decay by up to 40%.
It's amazing because it prevents the bacteria from growing. And also if there is a little bit of decay, it causes remineralization of the tooth that actually brings the tooth back.
But the state surgeon general, Dr. Joseph Latipo, has recommended against fluoridation of water due to what he calls the neuropsychiatric risk associated with fluoride exposure. U.S. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said he plans to tell the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to stop recommending fluoridation nationwide. And the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, which sets maximum levels of fluoride in water systems, announced it's also reviewing new scientific information on potential health risks of fluoride. The Immokalee Water and Sewer District says it actually turned off the flow of liquid fluoride in January, based on these state and federal developments. Executive Director Sarah Catala says it's a decision her governing board members studied carefully.
Our board members grew up in Immokalee, so they care about the community and they want to make the best decision for the health of Immokalee. So this wasn't an easy decision because of the fact that there is a lack of dental care here.
Before turning off the fluoride, she says her team kept fluoride levels consistently below recommended guidelines, the equivalent of less than 1 gallon of fluoride per every million gallons of water. The $8,000 savings from removing that mineral this year will now be donated to Anzalone's Healthcare Network to help provide dental care to kids that need it. Pediatric dentist Dr. Douglas Keck fears low-income children will get left behind.
That's my biggest concern, is that there will be more children in pain. Some of these children who can't afford care in a regular dental office setting will end up in the emergency room. And unfortunately, it will increase the cost of healthcare overall, not just in dentistry.
That was WGCU's Sandra Victorova reporting. And our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Tim Padgett, Wilkin Brutus, Joe Mario Patterson, and Sandra Victorova. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again next week online and on air for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.